Basic Brewing Radio is sponsored in part by the American Homebrewers Association. This Saturday, August 6th, is Mead Day. See what the buzz is all about and celebrate this sweet homebrew holiday. Now through August 8th, the American Homebrewers Association is offering listeners $5 off an annual membership with promo code MEADDAY22. Visit homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to download a variety of mead recipes, find a homebrew supply shop, and dust off your mead-making skills with how-to videos. That's homebrewersassociation.org/basicbrewing to get $5 off for Mead Day when you join or renew by August 8th, 2022. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 4th, 2022. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Malcolm Fraser and Melissa Larrick of Hop Farm Brewing in Pittsburgh share some tasty beers in this first part of a two-part conversation. These are the last couple of shows that we recorded when we were in Pittsburgh for HomebrewCon, and it's well worth the wait. Lots of fun today. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs and our brewer's logbooks. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Financial supporters have already seen the video episode that I'm going to post on Friday to the general public. It's the one about the beer based on Bell's Two-Hearted Clone recipe, this time with Maris Otter, Galaxy Hops, and Kvike. It's really a tasty beer that we sampled 7 days after I brewed it and pitched the yeast. That's thanks to the Kvike and the hot weather that we've been having around here. At least the heat is good for something. Also on Friday, there's something really special coming to you live from our friends and sponsors Ricky and Kelly from Groenfell and Havoc Meaderies. Around lunchtime at noon Eastern time, I'm set to lead a conversation with Ricky the Meadmaker on the Groenfell YouTube channel and social media live. So we'll be able to answer your questions. It's mainly about Groenfell's new Secret Labs project, Honey Spritzers. On Groenfell.com, they're now offering Cranberry Apple Honey Spritzer and Cranberry Lime Honey Spritzer. I'm very excited about this because in addition to talking to Ricky about how these are made, I'm going to be sampling them too for the first time. These Honey Spritzers, they say, are light and tart. Only 4.2 ABV and 120 calories per can. Great for summer. All natural ingredients, water, honey, cranberry juice, and either lime or apple juice. You can find great deals on the Honey Spritzers on Groenfell.com in either twin packs or four packs. I can't wait. If you miss it on Friday, I'm sure it'll be archived on Groenfell's YouTube channel afterwards. Unless I say something that gets us canceled. And then I'm nervous about going live. In the meantime, especially because Steve may be joining, and he's Mr. Non Sequitur. In the meantime, head over to Groenfell.com and pick yours up to taste along. That's at family-owned and operated Groenfell.com. And we'll see you on Friday. That's Groenfell, by the way. We got a lot of sampling and talking to do this week in this interview. I was very excited to go to the hop farm when I knew that we were going to Pittsburgh. You'll know Malcolm from his work with Brewlosophy, and we were very happy to meet and talk with Melissa Larrick, who's been working with Malcolm. So let's go back a few weeks to Pittsburgh and hop farm brewing. Malcolm Fraser, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
It's been way too long.
I know.
I was really happy when you reached out to me, so this is awesome.
Great to see you.
Great to see people in general, but great to see you.
And Steve
Inzal.
Yeah, speaking of which, you're Steve Wilkes.
I am Steve Wilkes, at least today.
And Zod O'Connor.
Howdy, everybody.
And we are here at Hop Farm Brewing, of which you are the head brewer.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the brewer here and the director of ops, but I also am a small owner at 412 Brewery down the road. Oh. So, yeah. Yeah. So some people confuse that. They say, oh, you're the owner here, and I just like to correct it because I don't want to take credit for something that's not mine other than the creative force and directing the brew crew. Yeah.
So is that a conflict of interest in any way?
It depends on who you ask. I do my best I can here, obviously, and I mostly do like technical advising over at 412. I was brought on for that role. We have our own brewer over there, and I just kind of help the brewer do the best job he can.
And we know you from Brewlosophy. We've spent some time with you in hotel rooms at other conferences. Are you still associated with those guys?
Not directly. I'm not contributing right now, but I'm still part of their chat groups and stuff, and I still consider myself friends with a lot of the old members. So Marshall and I still text and talk. He's still a good dear friend. Jake and I are still friendly. Brian Hall and I consider to be a real close personal friend. I love that guy. I love Marshall too. But you know, you form kinships with certain people and you just connect. And so yeah, I'm still friends with them, and we've talked about me coming back for various roles. I just can't commit to brewing once a month for the podcast and for the website. But we've talked about maybe doing something pro wise if it makes sense for all parties. You know.
Right. Yeah, you get your hands full, it seems like to me now.
and then if you ask my wife and probably my kids, that if they were to vote for something else, they'd say no.
So we've got a flight of mostly yellowish beers here in front of us. And I don't know if that was accidental or on purpose.
It's definitely accidental. As we were pouring them, I was like, this is a bit monochromatic. We do have a sweet stout on, and we have two cans of mild here, two different versions of a mild, a drier one and a less attenuated one. We can talk about those afterwards if we're not too drunk and if we have time.
And we did Uber here, by the way.
All right.
So let's start it off. First of all, cheers.
Cheers to all you guys. Awesome.
It's good to be here. It's good to be with you again, and good to share your beers. And what are we tasting here, this first one?
Hopefully you can tell. It's a classic, I think classic Helles. So it's called porch beer because we tried to name it to, you know, elicit some thoughts and feelings. You know, I'm an occasion-based drinker, I like to say, so I like to drink what I'm drinking depending on who I'm drinking with and where I'm drinking. So porch beer, to me, I think tells its own story. You know, it's a porch drinker. 4.8% classic Weyermann malt. I use a little bit of origin malt, which is from Ohio. Noble hops, you know, at 60 minutes. So it's like 18 IBU, you know. I use 3470. Some people poo-poo on that yeast. It's great. Usually what I do is I use 3470 first generation for a light beer because if you drink a lot of the classic macro lights, they are a bit estery. So I'll use that first for the light beer, and then second generation I'll use for Helles. And the way our brew system works is the first 10-barrel batch is like a starter, and then we brew on top of it twice. So it's a 30-barrel. Yeah.
What do you think, Steve?
It's really nice. It's clean. See, I don't call it a porch beer. I call it a lawnmower beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's clean. It's very quaffable. You could drink 3, 4, 5 of these and, you know, be okay.
Yeah, it's exactly how I described it. It's clean. There's, you know, a Helles Bock is one of those beers you can get wrong, but harder than it is to get right.
It's like, standard Helles, though.
Yeah, but, oh, sorry, standard, just a Helles. You know, it's one of those very difficult to do beers because you can't hide anything, and this is amazing.
Sure. Yeah, thanks.
I'm glad we're tasting it first. It is very clean. The first sip was a little bit, and I don't know if it's the hops, but was a little bit perfumey. But the second sip, maybe not so much.
So I did say originally it was a classic Helles, and I do think it is, but I did put a 15-minute addition of, Herzberger. So it's going to have a little bit of floral hint to it. And I do think compared to our last couple, this one is a little more ester forward. You can't really tell until it gets a little bit warm. But our first cup of Helles, I think, were a bit more neutral on fermentation character. This one does have a slight hint of, like, maybe apple pear. I'm just being a self-critical, you know, idiot. I always trying to drill down and make the best beer possible. But this one, I think most people would drink it and say it's fine. But, you know, back in the back, us brewers and the assistants, we try to pick it apart, you know.
Yeah, and I wasn't trying to be negative with the perfuming content or comment. No, I've had half a sample.
I was going to say the Herzberger, I mean, it's a hop that I've used a lot, and I can't say that I picked it up and went, oh, that's Herzberger. Yeah. But as soon as you said it, oh, yeah, that's why it's so familiar to me. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Super nice.
Yeah, I've been pretty, you know, anytime you go from home brewer to pro, and a lot of your friends and colleagues from the homebrewing world and, you know, podcast folk and obviously all these judges in town, you get a bit self-conscious and you have imposter syndrome. But, you know, I don't know if it's nicety, but a lot of people have been commenting positively on the Helles. So, you know, I haven't pointed out the little Esther note that I pick up. I'll let them enjoy it.
Yeah. Don't, if people like, take the compliment is what I like to say.
It's like the guys that say, I can really hear a huge difference between vinyl records and CDs. Okay.
I keep my CDs in the freezer. Do you remember that stage?
Oh, yeah.
This is, while we're enjoying the rest of this one, talk about your journey from home brewer to professional brewery. How did you get here?
Oh, that's such a how long do you guys got? You know, so I started brewing in like 96, 97 when I was in the Navy. And all my Navy roommates knew I was a beer nerd, and they bought me equipment and said, hey, we'll pay for everything if you just keep the refrigerator stocked. You know, so we had like a two-tap kegerator, and I did that for years until I moved to Pittsburgh. I started getting involved in homebrew clubs and stuff, and then it became more critical. It wasn't just a bunch of drunk sailors, you know? And that really...
What do you do with a drunken sailor?
Yeah.
Early in the morning.
I'm not going to finish the song because the Navy songs go dirty fast. You know, I could tell you about, like, never mind.
It's a family show.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that was like a blessing. I think it was eye-opening because I was a Trash member and a Trube member, which is Three Rivers Alliance of Serious Homebrewers, and Trube, which is Three Rivers Underground Brewers, something like that. But Trube just won the Radegast, which is amazing. I mean, I'm so proud of those guys, you know. And then Trash was Trube was very more focused on charities. So that deservingly won Radegast, right? And Trash, when I was involved and was an officer, we were very technical and very more centered on competitions. So we had a bunch of members who really like bought classic styles and brewed right through the book and entered a lot of competitions. And we formed a little group called the Pittsburgh Underground Brewers Group. Very creative. But involved in that group was a lot of pro brewers. So what happened was we just invited people. It was kind of like a secret society, and it was said, hey, check your egos at the door. So home brewers and pro brewers, side by side, we would go through beers and just tear them apart so we could get better. Yeah. You know, so we'd go over guidelines. We'd go over off flavors and positive attributes, and we'd say, how did you make this and what did you do? You know, people left with hurt feelings sometimes. They brought a beer they thought was banging, and we'd be like, well, but it's this, this, and this, you know. But we didn't talk about it. We didn't get posted on social media. It was all, this stays, it's like Vegas, right? You know? So from that group, I just started meeting a lot of pro brewers and these friends, and certain people were good at certain things. You know, some brewers were very into, you know, British beer or German beer. And I was really big into water chemistry and process control. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you're getting invited over to like, hey, come help me with my water. Come help me with, you know. And we really drilled down into like, we would not only bring our beer, we would bring the ingredients. We'd bring hops to smell. We'd bring grain. Hey, why is this beer different from this beer? Oh, I made two golden ales, but one was with Thomas Fawcett and one was crisp. Huh. So you're really developing like mastery of ingredients, you know. That's the only way you can do it, in my opinion, is brewing a lot and brewing side by side and comparing.
Which goes along with your brewlosophy experience as well. I mean, I assume you were doing triangle tests and things like that as well.
Yeah, and that's how I was invited into brewlosophy. I was doing all this stuff, this very technical stuff, and taking a lot of notes and talking with pros and talking with homebrewers. And, you know, arguing as the internet is designed for, I think, that and cat pictures. So, you know.
And food.
And food. Food pictures. Yeah, I'm guilty of that too. So, you know, sometimes some of these brewlosophy, the early brewlosophy articles would come up and I would say, but this and but that. And then Marshall was just like, can you shut the hell up and help us? You know, and it became like a good friendship because of that, you know.
Awesome. Well, let's pause the story for a second. Go to beer number two. What do we have here?
I think this is May Queen. So this is a farmhouse ale mixed fermentation for an event we're doing tonight. And the event is a female-centric collaboration. I'm the only spoiler, and mostly what I did was get out of the way. So Katie Sullivan from Coven down the road, Megan Seasted, she had brewed at, like, you know, Rock Bottom and North Country and a couple other places, I think Rivertown, yada, yada, Southern Tier. She's a pretty accomplished brewer. And she has a podcast called Halloween is Forever, which is very horror movie-centric, with another friend of mine, Brian Reed. So they're doing a podcast. We did this collaboration. Megan actually was the catalyst, you know. And then we brought in our artist here at Hop Farm. His name is Monica Dumich, and she is Icarus Art. So Icarus Art did the label for May Queen. And who else we got? A B.A. Voyant, which is a tea shop down the road, female-owned. And then a Poitia apiary, which is an apiary for honey across the river. So the honey is from her. So it's all female except for this guy, you know. Very proud of it. Very proud of the beer. It's a standard saison, like 30% unmalted wheat with Pilsner malt. I think it's Weirmann Barque. We used Omega's Saison Stein, which is our Saison Stein, but that is a chewer. That's a great yeast. It kicks out a little bit of polyphenols. I mean, polyphenols, phenols, like a pepper, and a nice little hint of bubble gum. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. You get the French Saison attenuation, but the DuPont funkiness and character.
So you mentioned honey. Is there honey in here?
Yes, there's a late edition honey. So Megan, when she was at Rock Bottom, won GABF Silver, I think, for a honey beer. So she was really experimenting a lot with honey, and she likes to do these cereal late editions.
Speaking of, is this Megan?
This is not Megan.
Not Megan.
This
Melissa.
Yeah, Melissa just joined us. She's our new cellar person, brewer in training, and we can talk to Melissa in a second. So,
well, first, say hi.
Hi.
It's good to meet you.
Likewise.
I'm James, this is Steve, and that's Zot.
Hi, guys. Pleasure.
We're talking about the May Queen.
May Queen. So May Queen is a reference to Midsommar, the movie, the horror movie, because Halloween Forever is a horror movie-centric podcast, right? So, yeah, we got all these people together, and we came up with a beer, and this is the second year we've done it. So the first year, there was no event. You know, it was just a female collaboration. And then Coven down the road opened. And Katie is very passionate also about farmhouse ales. So we wanted to get some of her input. And this year we used buckwheat as well. So, and the buckwheat came from a local maltster. So,
it's really good. Yeah. I'll go first, even though I'm the least probably, my palate is the least trained and tuned. But first of all, I would drink this all day. When you talk about farmhouse beers, you expect something to be funky. I don't get funk with this necessarily.
Not in the, like dirty hay soil sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Zod is pointing. Okay. They're fighting.
He says no.
Melissa, what do you think? I don't know what they're going.
I don't know what's going on over here.
What do you think of this beer?
I'll tell you. I think you have the wrong beer.
It's this one?
Yeah. You try.
Okay.
Tell me.
Let me change my mind here. Melissa,
yeah,
you talk.
Cheers. Hey, yeah, so...
He does.
He does have that's the wrong beer.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna, this all stays in.
I'm just like, edit that part.
Yeah,
out.
I'm like,
no. Steve knows his partner. Steve knows his partner.
I'm like, this. I'm like, this isn't that funny.
No, that was beautiful.
Okay.
You gotta leave that in.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the way it goes. Yeah. Okay. Melissa, what do you think about this beer?
I think it's really nice, light, refreshing. Love like the oaky characteristics that it gives, kind of on the end.
Oh, where did you put this beer? I forgot about that aspect. Where did it go after the stainless? It was parked in the what?
Oh, into our footer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful little piece of equipment we have. So it conditioned in there for quite some time. So it like gathered up a lot of, you know, nice oakiness to it, but it's mellow. It's not like really punching you in the nose by any means, but it's there. It's quite nice.
Okay, this is a lot more complex than it.
This
is a lot more complex than the other. Never mind what I was saying before.
Well, I credit Zot because he knew it, and I looked and I went, I know that too, but I was like, let it go.
No, let him fall on his own.
No. When the Emperor has no clothes, you tell him he has no clothes.
Well, I was tasting another beer.
But I agree with you. The fooder really settled this beer out. I mean, this is the most subtle farmhouse ale I've had in a long time. It doesn't hit you in the face. Doesn't knock me over with a horse blanket or hot flavors.
Right.
It's very quaffable and very accessible beer. And you're right. It picked up that oakiness a little bit. It's just a really complex beer without being too much.
And I think the oakiness really complements like the honey and the tea flavors as well. Like they all really work together really nicely. It's really harmonious.
So the tea was a blend. We all got together and blended it, but the original version was from Abie Voyant, Danielle. So Danielle, she came up with this tea. It's a chrysanthemum, dandelion, rose, and a little bit of peach. And I think white tea. So she gave like four or five versions of us, and there's a picture early on of all of us steeping the different versions in, and everyone got together and picked, and it, you know, it was collaborative. And I'm notoriously a strong personality, so a couple of the people on the group were just like, well, he's just gonna do what he wants anyways, and I'm like, no, I'm not, damn it! Like this is the, you know, I was like, I'm trying to defend myself, and you know, Katie down the road, Coven, I think she has most of the collaborators are talented, which is why they're invited. But Katie has a real good palate, and she's also very vocal, which is why I appreciate her. You know, she was just pointing to one in particular, and you know, personalities can be, people kind of funnel towards it. But I think we came to the right conclusion. I wanted one that was more floral. This one has a peach kiss on it, a little bit of, it's like if you look at the tea, there's little strands of peach in there, and I think we did right.
When we were introducing the tea to the beer, I was dumping like the tea leaves and the actual flowers like into these steeping bags, and it was like almost making me salivate because it was like such a tart, like sweet, almost like Starburst candy like smell in the air while I was like preparing it, and it was like, oh, this is gonna be good, you know.
Melissa, did we get your last name? I want to make sure you're properly introduced.
Oh, I mean, then people can trace me here, but I'm just Melonly.
All right, okay, no, that's cool.
It's Larrick. You can look me up.
Okay.
Well, I do have a quick question, Mel. How long was it in the oak? Because it's really so well blended.
Going to direct that to Malcolm because that actually came, like I started working here right in the middle of that production. I think you guys had just transferred into the fooder probably a week before I got here. Is that right?
So it's about 1.5 months on a relatively new fooder.
Yeah. And how long after? How long has it been since it was off the oak?
Oh, just it only kissed the bright for a few days, just to get carbonated.
Man, I'm really getting the tea now. The floral, although now I'm really shy about saying anything because I've been busted. I'm a charlatan.
I was going to ask, when you said dandelion, was it the dandelion flower or the dandelion leaf? Because that would make a big difference in the flavor.
I actually don't know. We can probably go get the tea in the back in a second, and we can find out.
It's just that dandelion leaves have a strong bitterness.
Sure.
The flower would be much lighter. So I suspect it was the flower, but I don't know that.
Yeah, there wasn't much bitterness in this tea.
Yeah.
And then actually, when it was in the fooders where we added the tea, and the honey. We are doing like cereal additions per Megan Seasted's recommendation, because that's the technique she was using on her her GABF winning beer. So we were just adding little bits of tea at a time, getting small amounts of re-fermentation, but what we wanted to do is kind of get it to terminal, right? We didn't want to leave residual sweetness.
Sure.
But we wanted tea, honey character, because the honey was very complex,
yeah.
And it's a local honey, so it's kind of nuanced. It's not like meadow foam or something. It's kind of like this floral, you know, complex honey. So we were just adding little tiny bits until we could kind of perceive it, and
yeah.
then stopped, right? So I think it only got like 15, 20 pounds of honey in 20 barrels,
right?
Wow. But this is post-fermentation,
right.
You know? So then we added tea, and it was like 20 pounds of dried tea in bags. And then we were going to add some more tea on the transfer over to the Bright, because that was our last chance to adjust it. But once again, we brought together most of the team, and you know, we got all the principals together, and I was an advocate for adding a little more tea, and I was like, let's just do like one or two more pounds, right, to get that floral nose.
Yeah.
And the women were like, no, this is subtle. This is what you say you like, Malcolm. Freaking do it. You know, don't gild the lily. And once again, Brooke Franis, who's Pink Boots president, she was like, he's just going to do what he wants anyways, you know, which is why I love her, because she gives me a hard time. But no, I listened. I asked for directions. And no, and I think they made the right call.
It's way good.
I was just going to say, this is when a Randall comes in handy. You
oh, yeah.
pump
yeah.
that thing full of tea and just run it through it.
Yeah. If you want to lose subtlety.
Very exciting news from Steve Wilkes. He says he's racking to secondary the mead that he made with I-22 Capri from our friends and sponsors, Imperial Organic Yeast. Capri is the first truly hybridized yeast from Imperial. You've seen the hoppy no-boil beer that I made with it a few weeks ago on the video side of things. There's not much of that beer left in the keg. It's delicious. Capri is a hybrid between A38 juice, an English strain, and A43 Loki, which is a Kvike. It's a great one for juicy New England IPAs. It certainly seemed to bring out the tropical flavors in my beer. I'm really curious to taste what it did with Steve's mead, you know, without the hops. It's just another example of innovation coming from Imperial Organic Yeast. You know we love them. With 200 billion cells in each easy-to-open package, I like to say my stir plate is dusty because I don't use it anymore to make moderate-gravity 5-gallon batches. And if I pitch in the early afternoon, my airlocks are usually bubbling before bedtime. Ask your local homebrew store about I-22 Capri from Imperial and check them out at imperialyeast.com. That's imperialyeast.com.
So to finish your story, wrap up how you made the jump into being a professional brewer.
Okay, so people who have listened to your podcast before in Brewlosophy, I think most of those people know that I was in the nuke business for years. So if you don't know, hi, I'm Malcolm Fraser. I was on Brewlosophy for a while. What happened was, you know, post-Navy, I went civilian. I worked for Westinghouse. I did nuclear fuel inspections and such, and then I got my license at a local nuclear reactor. And I just wasn't happy. You know, I mean, good money and stuff like that, but I just wasn't happy there, and my wife knew it. And she's like, just go do what you love, you know, which is why I love her. She supported me, you know, almost brings me to a tear to talk about. But she said, hey, go do it, you know. And I was going to join a couple local breweries. We were in talks. And then, funny enough, everything comes full circle, is Brian Reed is part of this podcast next door. He was working for Miller Coors. And one of the big pain spots for a lot of people going from a fairly prolific career where it pays well is the money. And he goes, you know who has money? Big beer. You know? And they had a position at 10th and Blake. It's called a trade brewer, which is mostly technical and advisory. It was innovative and educational. So and they paid well. So it was a decent little small step down transition for my family. So I worked for Miller Coors for a couple of years.
Mm,
and I was
nice.
I was in the Southeast rep for like I was attached to Terrapin, but I wasn't really at Terrapin. But I worked with them. They had a brew lab in Georgia, Atlanta Stadium. The group was amazing. I mean, almost everyone in the group is like master Cicerones and advanced Cicerones. Mm-hmm. And I was on that track, but then we all got laid off because they had a massive layoff, several thousand people. And our group was normally protected, but it was a deep cut, you know. Mm-hmm. And they, I'm not going to sit here and go over the whole entire history, but they didn't just like cut and run. They get offered me other jobs, you know, but they didn't make sense for my family. You know, so like they offered to move me to Texas with another brewery out there. I don't want to get too much detail, but you know, they offered me placements. You know, it didn't make sense, but I had luckily fostered several relationships in the area, and I knew Matt Cole at Fatheads, who we had done collaborations as a home brewer before, and that's what everything's about, right? Relationships. So I was like at the airport when I got this phone call, and I like texted him. I said, "Hey, I'm going to be looking for something. Let me know if you know anyone," because he knows everybody. And he was like, "I want you." Yeah. You know, so I was like, "What the hell? Really?" You know, so we talked about it. I was interviewing other places, and it just made sense as a transition for my family to get closer to home. Cleveland is closer to Pittsburgh, so it was the stepping stone. And I said, "Hey, you know, I'm not going to be here that long." He goes, "I understand this is not your last stop." Mm. You know, but they were really cool. Great relationship still with those guys. Chris Altman is the director of ops. I consider him one of my mentors. You know, obviously there's some, they make great beer there, you know, so that was a transition stop. But then COVID happened. And my role was made for me by them. So I was one of the cuts, you know, so it's like, you know, it was tough. That hurt. And, but when that happened, lots of people here offered me stuff, and this role worked out because it was a transition role. We've talked off mic about the expansion, so I was brought in to help them expand. You know?
Well, that's I've told people a lot. It's you always look for an open door, but you've always got to be prepared for that open door. And it's not necessarily what you know, although you have to know. You know, you have to be competent in whatever job you're looking for, but it's who you know. It's making connections, and it's, you know, that's how you find it. A job. So, yeah. You know, your story kind of goes along with that. So we're glad that you found a place, and we're glad that you're making good beer, and we're glad that you're spending time with us.
And the funny thing is it works that way in so many ways. Like, you know, obviously you gotta be prepared for when luck approaches, right?
Yeah.
So I was a very technical person. I think if you listen, we had a group here a couple days ago, and there was a bunch of Brewlosophy fans, and they're like, "Hey, you sound smarter on the podcast." And I was, he was giving me a hard time. I'm like, "Editing, you know." But you know,
we leave all that stuff in.
So, you know, I was a very technical brewer, and that was my in. My in was water chemistry, recipe development, you know, pH, you know, and that was fostered through relationships. I had mentors such as like Agatha Feltis and Martin Brungard, you know, but those people helped me. Those people helped me get to where I was. And then podcast, you guys had Kai Troister on, and I would text and email him, and he would help me out. I mean, the guy is awesome. AJ DeLang, you know, those people helped get me to where I was, right? It's all through contacts and building up. And then all the relationships I had in this industry in Pittsburgh, that's why I have Mel here, Melissa, because
I was hoping you were going to volley into that, because kind of your trajectory, I mirrored that by getting me back home here to Pittsburgh. So, yeah.
Tell how I found you.
Before we transition, we have to keep drinking.
Sorry.
Before we transition into Mel, what is this? Are we drinking the beer now that I've had half of that I'm clueless about?
That's not the Russian Imperial Stout.
So the beer that you thought was May Queen, which didn't have a lot of funk on it, shouldn't have, because it is a...
See, it was right.
You were right. It's a classic wheat summer ale, but we added ginger and peach. So it's a about 20 pounds and 10 barrels of shredded, with a food processor, of Costa Rican organic ginger.
Wow. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know how much ginger I'm getting, but the peach really hits me in the face, especially on the back end.
Yeah.
Is my palate just dull that I don't get the ginger right now? Of course, you prefer Marianne.
Well, it's true, but I'm not going to go there. I get both, but I get the peach on the front end, and it's very strong. It's very good. It's a it's a good amount of peach, and then I get a little bit of ginger in the background, and it's nice. It's real nice. So,
if you've ever had Republica Tea's ginger peach tea, this is identical. Like, I really get a good chunk of ginger on this, and it's a tea that I don't drink a lot, but I really like as kind of a very desserty kind of tea to have, because it tastes sweet even though it doesn't have it. And that's what I get here. This is amazing.
Yeah, maybe it's usually when I think of ginger, I think of heat, and I'm not getting heat, but I am getting the fruity flavor of the peach. And I probably am getting some spiciness of the ginger as well.
I think it builds. Yeah. You know, as you, like, towards the end of the pint, it kind of builds, your palate gets used to it. And maybe this is TMI, but, like, if you have, like, a little hiccup, it'll, like, give you, like, a little burn, which I find really enjoyable. So that's just...
A ginger burp.
Yeah, exactly. I'm into it, so...
I'm calling my next beer ginger reflux.
Oh, that's good. That is rich. I like that.
Don't encourage.
I was going to say,
don't encourage him. Don't encourage him.
This beer definitely burps well. So I get a tinge of heat, and I try to be pretty collaborative in the back with Mel and our assistant brewer Tom. Is bring everyone in, and some of the front of house as well. And our chef is amazing here at Hop Farm. So I bring him in, and we taste it, right? And this beer was weird because as we were walking up the ginger amounts and the peach amounts, you know, it seems obvious, like no duh, but as you build up one, the other one goes down, right? And then what are you trying to highlight? And we don't want to make this like a sweet, cloying beer. We wanted it to be refreshing, you know, and we found this like happy medium where it was just a hint of ginger at the end, because ginger can be polarizing, you know. So we wanted just a little tiny hint of heat. And that's why we went with Costa Rican versus, like, the Asian-style gingers.
Sure, yeah.
And we were tasting all these gingers, you know, in-house, and biting on them and chewing on them and stuff. So this one's a little bit more floral, and I get a little more ginger flavor than I do heat. But just a kiss, I think, you know. And I think the order is as described, is you get peach, and then at the end, ginger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as you said floral, I took that last sip, and I tasted it before you said it. But I do get, it's very floral at the end. But then there's also the peach as well. So, it's way good.
I was going to say, I'm also impressed that the peach character is still there. Peach is a really hard flavor to hold on to. And I used to tell my customers, if you're going to make a peach beer, use apricots, because the flavor is so much stronger. But to maintain that delicate peach in the front end of this beer is an accomplishment. And it's hard to do.
Yeah. So talk... Technical, if homebrewers want to get this in their own homebrew, what are some hints that you can do on where to add it, how much to add it, how to add it, all that?
So cheating is winning in beer. So if what I do is I add a little bit towards the end of fermentation, and then if needed, I'll add a little bit of extract. So I did it all the time in competition, especially with fruited beers, is I would add, I wanted the fruit because I wanted that flavor, and I think you can tell when it's only extract. And there's some good beers out there that are only extract. So what we did is we added 45 pounds of peach puree towards the end of fermentation. So the yeast is kind of tired. Most of it's done. So there is some residual there. But it did ferment a little bit. Yeah. So, and then we taste it and we can adjust. And what we only added, I think it was like 5 ounces of extract. And we used like an organic extract. I can get you the name later. But we used like 5 ounces in 10 barrels. And it was just enough. Like, we added it, and we were doing dropper samples on the bench, right? So we had, like, a bunch of them, and we were all kind of giving our input. And we're like, this is almost nothing. But that little tiny bit just punched the aroma up.
Takes it up, yep. Yeah. Yeah. Say, you know, extract is a great tool in your toolbox. You just don't want to get carried away with it. And that, to me, is the right way to use it. It's just punch it up just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way good. Mel.
Hey.
So how'd you come into the story?
So I met Malcolm at a Fueled by Hops event that I used to work for. I used to do social media, and I was a contributing writer for them. We met back in November, and it was weird because we had like 1,000 mutual friends, but we really never crossed paths. So Mike Ty, I don't even know his whole full last name.
Mike Tzarczyk. He's at Dancing Gnome.
Yeah, and he's also a part of the Brewers Guild as well. One of like the board members.
He is
the director at the Pittsburgh Brewers Guild. Yeah.
Amazing. I just thought he was on the board. You go, Mike Ty. Anyway, so he introduces us, and we're chatting because at the time I was a distiller in upstate New York. Little backstory, I'm from Pittsburgh. I've worked in the craft beer industry here, but I was in the front of house for quite some time, and I just kept pushing to get in the back of house. Lack of time and resources here in Pittsburgh was kind of keeping me from doing that. Nobody really wanted to bring on somebody that was like completely green, you know, and understandably so, right? There's not a lot of time or space for that. So I landed a brewing internship in upstate New York at Sloop Brewing, and I did that for 3 months.
How'd you get the scholarship?
Through our beloved Pink Boots Society. It wasn't a scholarship, but it was actually through their like job forum, you know, opportunities and such. So I found that, I applied for it, got it, never would have thought I would get selected, and I moved up there. I decided to stay because I just loved the area so much, and I got an assistant distiller position. And it was kind of interesting because coming out of like this brewing internship, I was like, you know, just coming out hot, really ready to like get into it. And then I went into like what I call retirement, because distilling is just so wonderful, but it's very slow. It's not like the same pace as brewing, where you have like, you know, a million things happening at once. It's really mostly at the end of the day like making your mash and then battling with your boiler to get appropriate steam to push things through the column. I mean, that's truly what it is. So while I enjoyed that really much, like very much, I was at a really great place called Arrowwood Farms in upstate New York. Gorgeous facility, and it was a brew stillery, so we shared a floor with a brewery, so I still felt relevant to the beer world, even though, you know, we were kind of working alongside each other. So anyway, I was like, okay, I want to come back to Pittsburgh. Like, New York was great, but I'm ready to come home. And Malcolm was interested that I was a distiller. He's like, we should talk shop sometime. And then we just kind of kept in touch. And I was like, hey, I'd like to come home. And you're like, come on down, girl. And that's pretty much it all worked out. So
again, you got to know what you have to know, but it's who you know. Make your connections. Don't be shy.
We were at this event, the Fueled by Hop event, and Ty, like texted me as soon as I walked in. You gotta come over here. I have someone you want to meet. And we started hitting it off, and I just liked her energy and her attitude, and she had this passion for, and we started talking sensory. Anytime I can talk sensory, I go, you have potential. You know, and then the distilling world means she had things to teach me, right? Because, you know, I'm a nerd, so I've done some research and I've done some home distilling, but this is someone who actually did it. So I was like, okay, let's talk. And we've just kept in touch, and when she said she wanted to come home, I think my first conversation was like, I don't have anything for you yet. You know, I'm sorry, you know. And then a couple months later, I was like, come on home. You know? I want you. Because I actually got scared that someone else was going to take her.
Oh, awesome. There you go. So tell me about how the role of the Pink Boot Society, because I mentioned this. I was in conversation with a friend of mine, and we were talking about how kind of male-centric the brewers community is, and she's from the outside. She doesn't know much about it. But then I said, but there's this Pink Boot Society, and the name Pink Boot Society kind of offended her somehow as a female person. But there's serious work being done with the Pink Boot Society, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's an international organization that was founded in 2007. And I think when it was founded, it was a time where it really wasn't that long ago. But for where we are now as to where we started from, I think a lot of things have changed. So like, you know, gender neutrality and being more inclusive. I think the Pink Boots name is really kind of dated. I think that we're ready for an update. But Pink Boots is actively working on like updating their, you know, model. Like before, it was only females that were in the brewing industry. Now it's female identifying people in any fermentation business. So that opens it up to wine, kombucha, you know, distilling, beer, all of it. So I think that they are, you know, truly striving for that inclusion, but it's taking some time. So it's
not just let's let the girls play in the brew house for a day once a year.
No way. Yeah. So what's really cool about Pink Boots is like they have this program, it's called Pay It Forward. So basically like if you you are awarded a scholarship. You earn it, right? You have to, like, write an essay, and you have to do some things. Every scholarship is different. Once you are awarded that scholarship and you complete it, you have to then take your training and, like, teach other females in your chapter about what you learned, and kind of give, like, a presentation. So, actually, Brooke Franis, who is our chapter leader, she, when I first joined Pink Boots in, like, 2017, it was my very first meeting, and she was giving a pay it forward little seminar. Sorry, Brooke, don't remember what we went over. I was really happy to be there. But it's, like, it's really cool because it keeps, like, that, you know, education kind of flowing and you know, opening up doors and pathways for others. So it's cool.
Well, excellent.
I recently got an email from listener Mitchell, who says he's going through the archives from the beginning and listens while he works welding food-grade equipment for a living. Well, Mitchell wanted some advice on what I think of the different electric brewing systems out there. Well, I think Mitchell is quite a ways back in the archives, because for the past several years, I've been bragging about my Warthog electric brewing system from our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of HighGravityBrew.com. And since Mitchell is handy fabricating food-grade equipment, I told him he might want to go the route of buying a Warthog controller and configuring his own custom setup himself, either with equipment from HighGravityBrew.com or with stuff he already has, or maybe a combination of both. That's the flexibility that some electric systems don't give you. Or if you're like me and not handy at all, you can pick up a fully configured turnkey Warthog system and let Dave build it for you. With some of the sort of bread machine type setups, you don't have the freedom or flexibility to configure your own system. And with the build your own system feature featured on HighGravityBrew.com, you can choose to upgrade your system with higher end gear like a spike kettle. Check out all the Warthog options, and don't forget to use the code EBC75BB to save $75 off your Warthog purchase at family owned and operated HighGravityBrew.com. That's HighGravityBrew.com.
Hey, what do we got?
All right, you tell me. What is
no,
it?
I say
we all wait and see what James claims
no,
the beer.
I agree.
Yeah,
no.
James, what do you think it is?
It's
liquid.
It's liquid.
I think I know what it is. I remember what it is.
Do us all a favor and don't be greedy. Don't be selfish and don't embarrass yourself. What do you smell?
Oh, I already tasted.
Okay.
This is a very hoppy. Ooh, boy. That's, ooh.
Yes.
Oh, I remember what this is. It's not necessarily very hoppy, but it's spicy. Super spicy. I'm getting a lot of heat.
Oh, I know. We had a switch up.
See? All right.
Yeah.
See now.
All right. We have a switch up. You are absolutely right. I thought I asked for the New England IPA, and what we got is the habanero beer.
Yeah. See? Oh, see?
There's some stories on this one that Mel can help tell.
Amazing.
So everyone put your OSHA earmuffs on. But so what's the name of this beer, Mel?
This might sting a little.
So what this is actually a base beer on Neon Turtles, which is a standard New England IPA with, like, you know, Galaxy and Nelson or something like that, and it's like a 7.5% beer. But we switched malt at one point and we got a lot of an efficiency bump, and so now we have what are you gonna do, right? So we actually ended up diluting it, which gave us more beer than we could put in our fermenter. So we diverted some of it into a side fermenter. We have this little small tank, right? And then we deaerated some water and diluted that even further because I didn't need another 7.5% hoppy beer on. So we diverted some deaerated water to it and made it like around 4.3% alcohol, you know, by the numbers, and dry hopped it differently than the base beer because why do the same thing again? So, but then we're like, well, what do we want to do with this? And, you know, once again, ask the seller, ask the front of house, and we're like, habaneros, you know. So we ended up adding habaneros. I think I got them from Trader Joe's. Just chopped them up. Well, first we put them in the oven. We roasted them in the oven. Got some blistering.
Yeah.
And this was 1.5 pounds of habaneros in 3 barrels of a lower gravity wheat-based New England IPA.
And seeds and all?
Seeds and all? Yes. I didn't want to deal with that. So I just, everyone into the boat. I did chop off the stems. But, yeah.
Yeah. It's got a link. This reminds me of the Carolina Reaper beer that we had the other day at the hospitality suite, whatever they call it now. It's got a bunch of heat, but to me it's not too much. Of course, I'm a bit of a heat seeker, but there is a lingering heat at the end of it, but it's really nice. It livens up the beer. Not that it was a dead beer to begin with, but you know what I mean? It's like, wow, look at that. You know, it just without being painful to me, at least, it is I could drink a pint of that. You know, I might need to eat something with it, but I think it's really delicious.
Well, I do too. And it's a really good example of using habaneros in a beer. They come through nicely. It's a little bit fruity. It's not too fruity. But the heat picks up, and absolutely ditto what you said. You could drink a pint of this. It wouldn't knock you over, unless you're maybe from Canada.
No offense.
No offense, eh?
Really, I think ketchup is spicy.
No, and I love Canada. No, it's just what a chili beer ought to be. I mean, it's just got enough heat to make you go, that's a chili beer, but not so much that you're just crying.
Panic mode, yeah. Right.
Yeah, and it doesn't, the hops and the peppers don't conflict. You know, there's not like super bitterness that would, you know, be astringent in the face of the pepper.
The key, I think, it's opinion-based for sure, but when I was at 10th and Blake Miller Coors, we were very, very big into sensory and food pairing. So we did a lot of work with other restaurants like that about use this beer with this food, and we did a lot of menu creation and stuff like that. And you know, Randy Mosher's book was very, very helpful.
Oh, yeah. Radical Brewing.
Tasting Beer.
Oh, okay. Beer. Okay.
Yeah. So Radical Brewing, also, for what it's worth, but Tasting Beer. And one of the principles you'll hear sensory people talk about is the clash between bitterness and heat. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're gonna go have Thai food and you're ordering an 8, 9, or 10, don't get an IPA, right? It builds, and they kind of, and to some people's palates, they build the heat. So now you're not 8, 9, or 10 is an 11, 12, or 13 on a 10-point scale. So that doesn't make any sense, but you get the point. So this is a New England IPA with all late hopping, and then we diluted it. So it's probably only 20 IBUs, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to talk.
Really to the point about what Steve brought out is the fruit of the chili really comes out in a way that I think is extraordinarily rare. Like, I can taste I get tobacco notes out of a good habanero and kind of a little bit of leatheriness, which is positive, not a negative. And also the pepper part of it really comes out. And I love the name of it because it has no heat on the nose whatsoever. This is just a hoppy beer, and you have no idea you're about to get stung. Like, that is the best name possible.
I mean, should we share the tale of how the name came to be? Wow. I mean, there's two stories. It's a two-parter. I'm going to put you on full blast here, Baja blast. So when we were adding the habaneros to the tank, Malcolm here, he like sets up a little bag. He's like, cool, I'm just going to like drop it in there, kind of close the ball valve, and hopefully it's all good. A little bit of gas builds up, and whenever he released that pressure, meanwhile, Malcolm just got knee surgery, and he's standing on a metal chair, and I'm like, for Christ's sake, please, what are you doing, first off? But it was already too late. I was like, okay, I'm here along for the ride. So I'm handing up things to him, and before I know it, we, like, a little bit of gas kind of got blown out of the top, and we just got maced. And eyes are on fire, and like poor Tom got it the worst, our assistant brewer, and like, you know, our noses are running, we're like all kind of crying. It was intense. So then after that, you know, a couple days go by, I'm kegging it off, and the hose that onto like the Sankey just blew, and it got all into my eyeballs, and I got burned by it twice. So So we were like, what should we name this beer? And I was like, this might sting a little. Sounds appropriate. So that beer has abused me, but it's worth it. It's good.
So I couldn't help myself. I went ahead and blended this with the ginger peach. And to give it that habanero kick to that ginger peach, and that's an amazing add. I was thinking about it the whole time I was tasting the ginger peach. If you guys didn't finish yours off, you could do the same.
No, I think that's absolutely the pro move. We have a couple regulars who are always mixing it. So I'm like, I'm kind of a persnickety beer nerd who wants to really like to have things a certain way. So this is the glass you use, and then we have a couple regulars who. Just like they don't want the tall, you know, Pilsner glasses. They want a big, massive like pub glass, you know. So I'll walk by and I'll see like one of our fruited sours in a pub glass. I'm like, what the heck are you doing? And he's like, oh, you know, and the bartenders, the servers are doing right. They're trying to please the customers. But I come in like, you know, dad mode, and they're all like, oh my god, dad's here, you know, hide the beer. So and they mix beers too all the time because they're regulars. And once again, the front of house is doing what they should do, and you know. Appeal to the customer, right? So I'm against mixing the beers or whatever, but I've loosened up, you know, because you can't take yourself so seriously. So I told one of the regulars named Gina, I was like, okay, if you come up with a good combo, we'll put it up on the board to call it Gina's Mix, you know. So every once in a while I should do that. So I think that, yeah, your suggestion of the ginger peach with the habanero is nice, but you're doubling down on the heat of the ginger, but that could be complimentary. Well, next door, we have the Berliner Weiss base, but was aged on Brett Clausenii and Brett Lambicus. So it's very peach and pineapple forward. That beer with the habanero beer is amazing, and we'll try that afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ah, there you go. All right, we have one more beer in the official flight.
Yeah.
And I think I know what it is.
All right.
So I'm not going to embarrass myself, but... Let me see here. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even have to. I know what this is. And I think I had it at the HumberCon. They were serving cans of this beer at the Pittsburgh
Brewers Guild
tent. So what do we got here, Steve?
Well, it's that Polish smoked wheat beer that I can't pronounce. But, and it's lovely. It's very nice. I mean, the level of smoke, the lack of hop bitterness, which is good with that smoke. All these beers are really quaffable. I'm really, really tickled about this. I mean, none of them are just going to kill you. You know, it's like, oh, I can't drink another pint of that. All of these, but this one would be wonderful with some good Kansas City style barbecued ribs.
said the guy from Kansas City. But you're a smoked beer guy. I mean, you like the smoked beers.
I do like smoked beers, and yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't have anything to add to that. I like smoked beers.
So, Zot, tasting notes.
So, Malcolm, is this the beer you brought to the, I will say, Ralph Malt to that session?
This
so
week,
I've had it, too.
This week in Ralph beer.
Yeah, this week in Ralph beer session, which was a wonderful session. I'm just going to say, if you didn't attend on in person, you didn't get all the beers. It'll be a great thing online, but that's why you go to HomebrewCon. Like, I had three different smoked beers, and then this one. And as you described it, it's ham water, and ham water is really good. I love that description. I can't do better than that. This is a really good Grouski. Or Gretzky, and
it's Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, I know. Again, Canadian. He'll just,
Our Canadian friends who we met are going to hate us by the end of the show.
But I'm also just going to break your rules and going to blend it with some of the habanero.
No, you're guest. Do what you want.
Okay. So before Zot ruins it, what are we drinking?
So this beer is called Muza, M-U-Z-A, which is a Polish word. And if I'm mispronouncing it, write in and complain to James. But it's the Polish word for muse, right? So this week in Rockbeer contacted me through a mutual friend, Art Whitaker. I'm not sure if you know Art from Milk the Funk, and he also had, I think, Von Siep's Brewery. Very talented, very knowledgeable guy, so seek that out. But this week in Rockbeer was going to do a presentation on Home Smoke Malt. And they're like, well, wouldn't it be cool if we did like a a collaboration with a local brewery. But they came up with this idea very close to the HomebrewCon. So the Smoked Hellas idea was out of the window. So I was like, well, I contacted some local maltsters and CNC Malt up the road here, about 45 minutes north of Pittsburgh. They do some custom smoking. So I was like, we can do like a Grosjetzky or a Grotzer, you know, if you're into the whole German occupation thing. Yeah. And I might have pronounced Grosjetzky wrong as well. So once again, call in and complain to James. And I'm willing to be learned, but learned up on that. So this normally, Grotzer or Grosjetzky is 100% oaked smoked wheat malt. Wow. But I've done these beers before, and it's usually Weyermann. That's the number one provider. That's who has it regularly and accessible to most people. So I bought that malt just in case, because it was a known quantity. But in the spirit of homebrew and their presentation was supposed to be about home smoking, I thought it almost seemed like cheating, you know. So I contacted CNC, Brendan at CNC, and he was very gracious, really, really. He like quickly made me this malt. But we tasted it and smelled it, and it was like way stronger, like just intensely strong. So we talked about, you know, some beers he had done and stuff like that. We settled on 30%. So it still is. Wow. It's 50% wheat malt, 50% Weyermann Barque malt, but it's only 30% of that 50%. No, 30% total. Sorry, 30% total malt is the CNC oak smoked wheat malt. And I was very, very, I was nervous, you know, because it wasn't a known quantity. I was very worried about that creosote acridness, and there's none of it. You know, this beer could have went south. You know, and so it was kind of just like, But
yeah, I like to say that an overly smoked beer is like licking an ashtray, but this is not like licking an ashtray. It's delicious. It reminds me of, you remember that the 100% smoked malt beer that I did with the Sugar Creek Malting Company, that Alderwood smoked malt?
Yeah.
I did 100% smoked malt beer, and this is about that same level. But we interviewed, what was his name from CNC?
Brendan.
Yeah, we interviewed Brendan at the booth, mm-hmm. and we tasted some peach smoked wheat, right?
Yes.
And it tasted delicious.
It was wonderful.
And I kind of dropped the hint that, boy, wouldn't it be nice to get some? So hopefully we can get some. But this is it is aggressively smoky, but it's not, for me, it's not intimidatingly so.
I was going to say, the only other example I've had was at a homebrew con, I think in Minneapolis, but I might be mistaken, so forgive me. This is a little bit smokier than I remember of that example. Gosh, I wish I could remember the brewery. But at any rate, it's just a wonderful beer. I don't know what I'd do differently. Nothing. I mean, it's a good beer. It's a good beer.
I think it's really good.
Agreed. And it's special because it was the first beer that was brewing on the deck whenever I walked in. And Malcolm set me up there and goes, smell that. What is it? And I was like, Grotzer. And then he allowed me to stay. Thanks for that, Malcolm.
No, it's wonderful.
That's why she fits in.
You can give it right back.
Well, no, she doesn't take herself too seriously. Yeah. And then Tom, the assistant brewer, who gets to deal with her most.
Oh!
Yeah. After about 2 weeks, he was like, she's picking up things very fast. So it's working out. Yeah.
Well, excellent. You know what? I'm tempted to keep on going, and we've got other beer. We've got darker beers, and we've got English beers on the table. Maybe we'll just save those for after.
Sure.
And because, you know, I have this self-imposed rule that I'm breaking right now that the shows don't go over an hour. This show's going to go a little over an hour. But I've enjoyed every second of it. And I'm hoping that you'll let us stick around and taste other things that are sitting on the table in front of us.
Absolutely. And if you want to let the microphone run, you could do bonus content, because I think comparing two different types of milds, a drier mild with brown malt and a less attenuated malt mild,
it'd be fun.
Yeah. A second show. Well, okay. Well, we'll hit stop now, and then we'll hit start again, and maybe, you know, if it's not long enough, It'll be a Patreon show or something, and then if it's full length show material, we'll have a second episode. So, Malcolm, we appreciate the hospitality so far, and in advance, we appreciate it more.
This was a pleasure, it was an honor, and I'm glad you reached out. And you know, in my early homebrewing days, you were one of the shows I started listening to. So this is, it all comes full circle. Thank you.
Awesome. And Mel, it's good to meet you.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. This is great.
Steven Zott, thanks again.
Jawohl.
I don't know where
whatever
came from.
He said.
Again, we're going to Uber home. So thanks, everybody.
Again, thanks to Malcolm and Mel. And Steven Zott, of course. We get dark in part two of the conversation next week. Dark as in the color of the beers. So much fun. See if I can taste the right beers in the right order in the second part next week. Don't forget to tune into Groenfeld's YouTube channel and other social media for a live conversation between me and maybe Steve and Ricky the Meadmaker about honey spritzers. You'll be able to ask your questions in the comments. Really looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voice. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. In the meantime, stay well and stay tuned. So long.